You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Julie Saul. Julie, thanks so much for being with me today.
It's my pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
So, Julie, let's talk about your gallery just to jump right into it. It's one of the galleries that I love in New York. I've seen your shows for quite a while. And let's start talking about what shows up now.
Okay. I think I'm going to do a little bit of what people did during the debates last night and give you a different answer to the question in addition to a direct answer.
Okay, that's fair.
Currently, I have, and actually it's something that I'm very proud of and excited about, I have an exhibition up of the work of Sally Gall. Now, Sally Gall and Julie Saul have worked together since 1984. In 1984, I came together with a friend of mine named Nancy Lieberman, and we formed a business called Lieberman and Saul and started working as private photography dealers or private art dealers specializing in photography. And very soon thereafter, I was contacted by somebody who I knew a bit, who I shared the same thesis topic with in graduate school, which was Moholy Nagy. This is a friend of mine named Andrea Miller. And Andrea Miller wanted to introduce me to Sally Gall. So we met in 1984 when Sally was still living in Texas, where she's from, and we started working together. And so this is our 12th exhibition that we have worked on together and that we've mounted at the gallery since we opened a public space in 1986. So Sally is known as basically a landscape photographer, and her work started out quite traditional. She worked in black and white. She worked with the square format, and she worked with a beautiful, beautiful paper that is no longer produced called Portriga. And since then, her work has evolved over the years, and as I said, this is our 12th show. But it's always been nature-based, very sensual. You might say that it's somewhat feminine, although I know that's it's a complicated description to apply. But this body of work is very, very different from anything that she's created before, and that's what's so exciting. The name of the show, the name of the body of work is Aerial, and it consists, our exhibition, of 11 photographs that are completely straight, which is to say there's been no manipulation digitally. They're digitally shot, but they're straight photographs. In other words, they're images that are just found in the world. And the subject is laundry. And they are spectacular, very beautiful, very life-affirming images of laundry in the breeze. Now, I hope your listeners will either go to your website or my website or just Google her name, and they will see that these images appear very, very abstract. And so they elicit references to things like Matisse and George O'Keefe, perhaps musical scores because of the lines. She really found this subject and pursued it very rigorously for a couple of years, and it has resulted in a beautiful new body of work.
So that's you talked about the original paper Portriga, and since you've been working with her for a while, and we're also talking about like straight prints, even though these as you're saying are so abstract. How did you see for her, and I imagine there was a shift, right, from analog, from using papers like Portriga, and I assume that was a non-digital process, to then her moving towards digital. And is that what happened with this photographer?
Well, it happened with this photographer, who is approximately my age, and many photographers of my generation, because this is a generation of artists who were trained, photographers who were trained and grew up really with traditional processes of black and white or color printing, and during the course of you know their lives and their practice, everything has shifted. Very, very few photographers work with analog these days, although there's been a return to it, which is a whole interesting subject in and of itself. I think it got to the point where people were almost seeing this as something that was disappearing, and so they wanted to pursue it and kind of recapture it and the artisanal quality of making photographs after, I think it was almost a response to the mega kind of Andreas Gursky generation of, you know, huge color prints. But there's also a hybrid that kind of preceded this moment where photographers shot with analog, scanned it, and then printed digitally, because really traditional color prints are almost non-existent these days. They're something called pigment prints. I have to say that I myself am trained as an art historian. I really had no technical training in photography. So in terms of the issues regarding the medium, I try and know everything I can about archival issues, because I think that's really, really important. There's loads of decisions that need to be made in the framing process and in the storage process, et cetera. I'm really interested in what the result of an artist's vision is, and I see the medium as a way to achieve it.
And since so I mean, we could talk for a while about photography.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you well, you did. I mean, you said, I mean, there's a lot of issues, of course, that comes up that we could discuss, and maybe we should also discuss in the part two of this interview. People will, by the way, see images of her work in the text of this, but you're saying, like other photographers you've worked with, because now we're talking about the history of photography a little bit, and also the history of your gallery. You've seen a number of artists, if not all artists who are photographers, move from analog to digital, is what you're
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, really, when digital came about almost 30 years ago, started to come into usage, there were many, many stages it went through, with everything from the cameras to the printing. And, you know, I didn't stay deeply immersed in it, but it's almost, you could compare it to the journey from records to 8-track tapes to cassettes,
right,
to CDs to everything's on the cloud, you know?
Right.
I think it's a very, very comparable situation. And the timing is comparable, because it all has to do with our transition into the digital era.
Well, and now even with the example you just gave, there's a move back towards vinyl. All albums are being created on vinyl,
yes,
now. Barnes & Noble sells vinyl. Everybody seems to. In photography, and I know this is opening up a big conversation, but just do you also see that returning? Analog prints, emulsion-based paper, do you see that,
yes,
returning?
Yes, I do. And I see a lot of artists who are making unique works, unique in the true sense of the word, as one of a kind. And for example, we represent this young woman named Chloe Sells, and hers is kind of a hybrid, but it results in unique works where she photographs, mainly she photographs in Botswana, where she lives half the year, and she records the African landscape. And then she takes these negatives, these analog negatives, and she goes into the dark room, and she combines these negatives under the enlarger and creates unique works, because there it's sort of like making a collage in the enlarger. And once that exposure is made, then the negatives and other materials that go into creating the image are dispersed and put away, and that's it. You know, it's really a one-shot deal. I think that people like the idea of owning something that is indeed unique. I think there's a little bit of a market driven issue here. It's also, as I said, a hybrid where most artists today are often trained in a kind of hybrid way. They learn painting, printmaking, photography, which you know, coincidentally kind of goes back to the Bauhaus where my interest in photography began. It just leads to making works that are not, to give an extreme example, like Ansel Adams' Moonrise, where, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of prints of that image that were produced in a whole bunch of sizes that are out in the world. It hasn't really seemed to affect their value, but I think that there is a resistance to that, and I can well understand it.
Hmm. And to talk a little bit about just the program of your gallery, because a lot of things have changed since you've begun the gallery till now, as you framed earlier. A lot of things have changed in the art world, in the photography world. This kind of, as you mentioned, the post-Gursky, you know, world for photography and everything else. How do you see your program now, and has that evolved a lot since you first began? I know that's kind of an abstract question, but what I mean is, how are you? What's your vision for how you're choosing artists? If it is that, can, I don't know.
You know, well, one of the questions that I'm asked most as a dealer when I talk to either students or groups that come in is, how do you choose your artists? And I'd love to say I have some incredibly strategic method, but it is very, very subjective. And it comes about from my being out in the world and looking and learning and thinking and hopefully evolving all the time. So, you know, there are some artists I represent that have been with me since the beginning, like Sally Gall, which is amazing. I mean, I really, what lasts for 32 years? You know, marriages, everything, very few things last for 32 years.
Right.
But, you know, I'm sort of proud of that. And, you know, it's like any relationship, you know, they all have ups and downs. It's complicated because you want the artist's work to interest you and engage you for the duration of your relationship. You want them to be happy with you and, you know, and vice versa. But I'm constantly looking at new work. For example, last year I went to the New York Book Fair, which we love at PS1, that's held every September, and I picked up a book, which was kind of just random because there are so many millions of books there, and it was a young artist named Corey Olson, who had a book published by a young independent publisher, and I just loved the work, and it turned out that he had recently gotten an undergraduate degree from the School of Visual Arts. And I just really was interested in his aesthetic and the way he was working. And so I did something where I put up a small exhibition of his work in tandem with an artist who I worked with through the 80s and 90s and who I no longer fully represent, but I love his work from that period. And his name is Zeke Berman. So here are two artists, really two different generations. I think they're 25 or 30 years difference in age between them, but I felt like there was a sensibility and a dialogue going on between them that was interesting. So, so you know, that's a curatorial idea. It's a generational idea. It's a historic. You know, it kind of gives a sense of history to the medium. There are many artists that I showed early on who I still work with, and I feel like, you know, if it's 20 years ago, it's really, with the short memory of the art world, it's a whole new generation of people who don't know the work. So somebody like Bill Jacobson, who I've been working with for many, many years, you know, I started working with him. His work is very, very different now than it was then when I started working with him. And at a certain point, about 7 or 8 years ago, I said, you know what? I really want to do a survey show of your work because there are people who have gotten interested in your work and collected it from each body of work, and yet I really feel like it would be very interesting to see it all together. And I've done that with a couple of other people that I work with, and so we did it. And for me, and I have a curatorial background. I have an art history background. I did some independent curating before opening the gallery. That's what is interesting and fun, is to to work with an artist in a way that, in fact, is very different from the way that a museum curator might work with an artist. I always say we get married, and they just, you know, go into some serious dating, because generally when a museum curator does a show, they get very involved with an artist for a period of, you know, 2, 3, however many years, and then they're on to the next project. But if one works with an artist for an extended period of time, it becomes, you know, a very different process. But back to what my program actually is. So I think that you could say in general, if you look, and we have a great website that I'm really proud of. We have our exhibition chronicle really going back to the beginning, and we're almost done with having, you know, every press release and every checklist and many images going back 30 years. So, you know, it's a great way of seeing, really just seeing what we've done. We've always represented contemporary photo-based artists, and some of them we've worked with for periods of time. Some of them we still work with, some we don't. It's almost always some kind of conceptual or studio-based idea. So, for example, we don't do photojournalism. We don't do, or generally we don't. I guess we have probably, you know, once or twice over the years. I don't do a lot of street photography, although I did a historical show of early color photography a few years ago, and, you know, that had a lot of street work. I'm very proud of a number of historical idea shows that we've done. One was we did a series of three over a few years. One was on botanical photographs. Another was on interior imaging of the body. And another was images of the moon. So, you know, it was a kind of science photography link. And one of the points was is that the images that any era produces are always a product of the available technology. So, you know, those are really fun, interesting shows to do. I have to say that doing those kinds of shows is enormously time-consuming, and I feel like the competitiveness of the art market today and the cost of doing business has really curtailed my ability to sort of check out and take the time necessary to work on these shows. And also, you know, really the availability of the kind of material that we were seeking has diminished. It's just harder to find things. Once you get an idea, I'm going to look for early X-rays, and you know, that show we brought up to the present to an artist that was doing interior imaging sculptures, and then we had Rauschenbergs, who, as you probably know, worked with X-rays, and it just gets harder to find the material, particularly the earlier material. So curating an annual schedule at the gallery is very much a question of balance. You try, it's got many moving parts, but you try and have shows that are different from each other in the course of a year. For example, currently we have Sally Gall up. It's her 12th show with us, and our next Wow. show is a young German woman named Andrea Grützner, who I have not even met yet. I first saw her work at an art fair in London last spring, and we're bringing the work over from Germany, and it's her first American solo show. The work has never been really shown here except in a couple of small group shows, and the work is very affordable, and I think it's quite wonderful. It's analog, as a matter of fact. So I like that balance of going from a veteran artist at the gallery to a brand new artist to the gallery.
Well, thanks for that, exciting. I hope everybody gets a chance to see the show that's up now, because it is a beautiful show. And before we go, and and continue with letting everybody look at the images and everything else in this interview, I always ask what books you're reading at the end. Is there a book, or it could be a blog, or anything in particular you're reading now that you could share with
well,
us?
I'm a big reader. I love reading, and I read a lot, and I usually have a couple of books going at the same time. So one book that I have not read fully, but that I've been diving into, is pretty heavy stuff. It's Nobel Prize-winning Russian author Svetlana Alexievich, and it's called Secondhand Time, and it is about the Soviet era, and it's a very, very big book, and it really consists of her weaving together many, many, many interviews with people who have lived during the demise of the Soviet era. And the reason that I'm particularly interested is I'm now representing two Russian artists. One is a photographer named Nikolai Bakarev, and he's sort of the Russian Arbus in a sense. I first saw his work in the Nostalgia show at the New Museum, and I've been showing him for a while. And the other is an artist named Pavel Pepperstein, and he is actually not a photographer. He's a painter and kind of a conceptual artist and a writer. And will be premiering his first solo show in the U.S. at the art fair, the Art Dealers Association fair, which opens the end of February. And I just want to say that I've been pursuing him for years and finally got hooked up with his agent just this year, but I had seen his work in the Russian Pavilion at the Venice Biennale in 2009. And that just illustrates how I'm always looking around, you know, I'm always looking around and seeing what I feel is interesting and meaningful and something that I could actually have some success promoting. And that's kind of the challenging and interesting part of the business. But anyway, I've been reading up a lot on, you know, Soviet history and society. And then I'm also reading the new Julian Barnes novel about Shostakovich, which is also a kind of Russian-themed thing, but a much shorter and more poetic read. So that's what I'm reading. What are you reading?
Very good. Well, thanks for sharing that with me. Yeah, those all sound very interesting to me. Julie, I want to thank you for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure talking about your gallery and your history and your work.
Thank you. It's been fun talking about myself. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.